You have found it. You found the Loftus Party Podcast. Congratulations. We're coming to you live from the BBC Long Island Division. What's going on, man? I don't know why I started it that way. I thought it would be fun. Give him a little bit of Michael Caine in there. Shall I stop the Lamborghini? It's a weird show. I'm in a weird mood, and I should let you guys know what's going on. Liberty Gypsy is down for the count. That girl was hit by a thunderous cold. She lives somewhere in the south. They got hit with snow. Power lines snapped. Trees went down. So we are sans Gypsy. I think we're down Gypsy now 2 weeks in a row, 3 weeks in a row. Will we ever get Gypsy back? I'm here. And guess who else is joining us, you guys? You'll remember this voice from the Wayback Machine. You go back to the early episodes. Andrew Apple from Los Angeles, California.
And amazingly, I am not on fire at the moment, which I'm very grateful for.
You should be grateful. That was very, very dicey. Hopefully, I want to talk about the fires later. We got to get an update on that because the LoftusParty.com West Coast headquarters is there, and I was getting some very disturbing reports earlier in the week, which is never good, never ever good. And then a buddy of mine, whatever, we'll talk about the fires. We'll discuss it. I don't want to do like the fake lead. Here's the good news, everybody. And I want to usually I wait till like the end of the show before I share this kind of stuff. And I tell people, I'm like, thanks for sharing the videos. Thanks for subscribing, all that kind of thing. However, I want to lead with that this time because there's like key moments. You want to put a little pin in it. You want to stop and you want to recognize. When we first started, you and I doing these little vlogs, I would like hold up my phone and I'd record some nonsense and I'd send it to you and you would make it look awesome and, you know, add all the stuff and the amazing editing. We were getting we're doing about 3,000 views, four fives. I remember being very excited about five. And Facebook does this thing where they tell you how many people saw it. They call that the organic reach. They always want you to buy an ad. They want you to spend some money, buy an ad, make it bigger, make it bigger. So our organic reach, I remember being excited when it was like 10,000. Then I remember being excited when it was like 40,000. We have had, because of you guys listening, and this is no baloney, this is complete heartfelt, God bless America goodness here. Our last vlog, the one that you and I put together, the one about the taxes and blah, 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 our organic reach, 115,000 people.
Woo-wee!
I'm not kidding. That's huge. That's ginormous. And now, like, and I'm not, don't stop, you guys. Don't stop. You got to keep supporting and sharing, and it's wonderful. And the YouTube subscriptions are just chugging right along. It's a wonderful thing. And I said that at the end of last week, but I'll say it now as well. This little podcast, this crazy experiment, not really sure what it is. We had our best month ever in November, this last month. So it's going well. Thank you, guys. It's going really well. I can't complain.
Well, you could, but why complain when things are awesome?
That is correct. Oh, and this is more like inside baseball stuff. The website's doing really good. The website's doing really good. It's amazing. You get excited like, oh, we've been approved. Like Google has to approve you for ads. They look at your website, they look at your content, and then you get approved. We were approved a while back, and I don't know, we might go Google. We're doing a thing with Amazon now. We've got other advertisers on there, which is all wonderful. But people are going to the website. They're clicking. They're exploring. They're reading the blogs. Now, I'll apologize to people right out of the gate. We're still figuring out what it is. It's like the fun thing. I've written a couple of reviews of video games. I love video games, but there's politics. There's video games, there's pop culture, there's all kinds of stuff. So as we muddle through and see what people like and what they don't like, we're figuring it out. It's this little experiment. I'm having a blast doing it, and I don't ever want to stop.
Then we won't.
then we won't. Okay, so with that being said, a big pat on the back to everybody involved. I write on a television show, and if you have half a brain, you can figure it out. My boss on the show is he's a funny guy. He's a funny guy. He wrote on the show Cheers, and I'm a fan. He makes me laugh. His name is Rob Long. And one of the other things that Rob does, he has a company called Ricochet, and it's like for the, I guess, the smart people. And we haven't been invited to join yet. I think maybe he's listened to a couple episodes, and I ask him, like, how's it going at Ricochet? He's like, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. Pretty good. That's the response I get. But he's a very smart dude. He's a funny guy. He's not a huge Trump guy. He's like, you know what he is? He's like all those National Review, those kind of guys. Like they like big picture, it's a wine and cheese crowd and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, he wrote a book. He's written several books. This is his latest book, and I told him I wanted to talk about it on the podcast. It is called Bigly. Now, I think you know what this book is about with the title Bigly. And what he has done, and I think this is absolutely brilliant, he's taken Donald Trump quotes and pieces of speeches, and he's presented them as if they were poetry. It's all tongue in cheek. These are actual Donald Trump, President Trump quotes. Like he really said them, and they're presented like poetry. So what I thought we would do today is we'd play a game. At the top of the show, I'll read one of these. Then I'll have you pick a number. A little bit later, we'll go to that page. I'll read another one. Now I might do them as a celebrity. I might do an impression. In fact, I will. So this is. I just decided it's going to be funnier. It'll be funnier if I do them as a celebrity or as a movie star or something. So my birthday is on the 14th. So I went to page 14 of Rob Long's Bigly. And oddly enough, the name of this poem, this one's called The Lone Ranger. All right. This is The Lone Ranger. And I will read this as Christopher Walken. Christopher Walken reading The Lone Ranger, a poem from Rob Long's book, Bigly, The Lone Ranger.
I have the bongos at the ready.
The Lone Ranger. I understand life, and I understand how life works. I'm the Lone Ranger. That's it. It was more like a haiku. Should I do another one?
Please.
This is called When I Was Young. When I was young. All right. This will be, I'll just go another one. Actually, I'll just do this as me. When I was young. You know, when I was young and when I was, of course, I feel young. I feel like I'm 30, 35, 39. Somebody said, are you young? I said, I think I'm young. You know, I was stopping. When we were in the final months of that campaign, 4 stops, 5 stops, 7 stops, speeches in front of 25,000, 30,000 people, 15,000, 19,000, from stop to stop. I feel young. When I was young, and I think we're all sort of young, when I was young, we were always winning things in this country. We'd win with trade, we'd win with wars. At a certain age, I remember hearing from one of my instructors, the United States has never lost a war. And then, after that, it's like we haven't won anything. We don't win anymore. That was dramatic. That was dramatic and good. That was from the January 21st speech at CIA headquarters. You're stunned. You're shocked. I can hear it in the silence.
Well, I'm fascinated more than anything else because, you know, I've been doing these podcasts with you for a long time, even though I've been a little more behind the scenes recently. And you have a great voice, but it's fascinating to take what Trump says and take it out of his voice and hear it in a much less off the cuff version.
Well, it's weird. And it coincides rather perfectly with, have you seen the Talking Heads video?
I have.
Which is awesome. They took I think it's Life During Wartime. I can't remember the name of the song. Letting the days go by, letting the water hold me. It's not, yeah. Anyway, they took David Byrne's head off. They put Donald Trump's head on, and then they took out the selected pieces of audio. So he's actually saying the words, you know, and you may ask yourself, how did I get this large automobile? And it works, and it's hilarious, and it's good. Like, I found that from Trump supporters. Sent that to me. It's like people, I have friends who are like super like MAGA, you know, yeah. And it's great. And they sent that to me like, check it out. And I'm like, I think they might be making fun of Donald Trump here, but I didn't care. It was awesome. And it's like Rob's book. I mean, obviously he's poking fun at Donald Trump. However, it works. It works on a really bizarre, cool level. You know, it's a very distinct voice. I dig it. I'm not insulted by it at all, and I don't think any like MAGA people would be. That's how you have to say MAGA, by the way. MAGA.
I learned something new today.
Yes, we always try to learn. Okay, so we'll be doing selected readings out of that. If we were doing this live, I would have people just send in like text messages or emails. So anyway, wow, we are way into the show. So it's going to be a bit of an odd one here, but we're going to jump into the news. There's some crazy stuff to talk about. We're going to talk about some more fun stuff later on in the show. It's so exciting. And we have to start thinking about our year in review show.
Ooh.
That's always I always want to do one of those. I was watching a lot of YouTube today. I was not a productive member of society. I was doing a lot of number crushing. Crunching.
We can go with crushing.
A lot of number crushing. I'm crushing numbers. Okay, so let's just start off with this. I'm looking over. Oh, because I flipped that over. That's the problem. We have the Mueller probe. Lots of people, and this will be interesting because I know you're not a Trump guy.
That is true.
And you're probably very excited about the Mueller probe.
You know,
and here's what. Go ahead.
I will say, I don't know if excited is the right word. I'm more fascinated by what's going on than anything else. And obviously, I'm watching it very closely. But I'm also of the mind that if you remove Donald Trump, it doesn't fix what I consider to be the problem with government right now. It just sort of, you know, puts a new head on top of the Hydra.
That's interesting. Explain that a little bit more. I'm fascinated with this line of questioning.
Well, okay. So you remove Trump, and then you end up with Mike Pence, who, interestingly enough, I think I disagree more with Mike Pence than I do with Donald Trump.
You're exactly right. Like, Mike Pence is an old school Republican, conservative, hand on the Bible, go, go, go. You know, old school conservative values. And I remember saying this, and I'm sure we can dig it up somewhere from this show. It's like Trump is not like conservative. He really isn't. Like Democrats and people on the left should be like, because he wants to do infrastructure, blah, blah, blah. And he says, you know, he wants to do something bigger and better than Obamacare, which people don't realize that was bizarre. That's like why people like Rob Long are writing books that are anti-Trump. Like conservatives are like, whoa, guy, you can't even say that. You can't even say that you're going to try to do, you know, something bigger and better than Obamacare. That's straight up socialism, and Trump ran on it. Trump is the most like left-leaning president, I would argue, that the Republicans have ever had. He talks like a Democrat. He has a lot of I can't believe you guys hate him so much. I really can't.
Well, and I will tell you what I think about that, the reason that Democrats don't like him. And when I was still, you know, on this podcast weekly, I was saying, and I still believe this, I don't think he really loves the job. I think that, you know, he ran for ideological reasons. You know, he was having some business problems, and this sort of propelled him back to being on top. And so because of that, he's just kind of allowed the Republicans to do whatever it is that they want. And that's where my concern with him comes in.
I would disagree. I think he wanted – I think he did want the job, but for whatever reasons. However, I think it's a lot different from running a corporation.
Oh, absolutely.
Corey Lewandowski has a book out. Him and some other guy that worked on the Trump campaign have a book out about what it was like. And literally, there was five of them, like five people. Trump would go give a speech – and five people would watch and they'd all have different jobs. And Corey Lewandowski, like, hey, go get me some McDonald's. And he'd run back and now call these guys and tell them I can do this. Like a really lean fighting machine. And those guys did everything. And I guess Trump ran it like a corporation, was like, he says, do something, you go do it or you're fired. He has to be incredibly frustrated at not being able to fire people, not being able to hold people accountable, it's got to be difficult for him. However, we're so off track. It was the Mueller probe is where we started off with. I'm glad they're letting people go from the Mueller investigative team. I'm really, really pleased about that. And I want them to continue to look into these people who are part of this, air quotes, nonpartisan investigative team. I mean, these people, there's people made like $60,000 donations to the Democratic Party. There's people who were there for Hillary Clinton's election night party. They were at Hillary Clinton rallies. They are out there shooting around anti-Trump text messages. That's you got to go. You're not. That's not impartial at all. That is like straight up partial.
And I agree. And actually, one of the things I appreciate about Robert Mueller is that he is above reproach when it comes to his reputation. This is a guy who worked for both W and Obama, and that's how much respect he has as a lawman.
As a lawman, as a man of the law. He was also deeply involved in the Uranium One deal. Did you know that?
I did not, and I don't give as much credence to the Uranium One deal as
gotcha.
You do. So,
okay, that looks a little hinky. I don't know. I'm not really. I really am not worried about it. The whole Mueller special investigation thing. I really don't think there's anything there. I'll be happy when they don't find anything. I'll be happy when it's done. It's always like going to the dentist. You're always nervous on the way there. You're nervous when they're doing the cleaning, and it's not till you get up out of the chair that you're like, okay, cool, that's over with. That's how I feel about the Mueller investigation. It's like we're in the chair. He's cleaning the teeth. They just found a cavity with Flynn. They're like, dude, you said this, you meant that, blah, blah. I think that Flynn, oh, whatever. The Flynn thing, I think that's a laughable joke.
I mean, do you want to get into that? Because I definitely have some thoughts there I'm happy to share with you.
About Flynn and that whole nuanced thing?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, we're going to get into that really quickly. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to name a number between 1 and 140.
I'm going to go with 42.
42. Okay, 42. We're going to go to page 42, or the closest one to that, where this is a poem by Donald Trump from Rob Long's book, Bigly. This is page 42, A Certain Position. And I'm going to read this as Arnold Schwarzenegger. While I've been president, which is just for a very short period of time, I've learned tremendous things that you could only learn, frankly, if you were in a certain position, namely president. That's great. I love it. That's fantastic. All right. Okay. So, wow, we've been cranking along. This is fun. So you have thoughts about the General Flynn thing, and then I have thoughts as well. Go ahead. What do you think?
So when you and Stacey spoke about it, you made a very valid point that what he pled to, it's not that off the wall. Like if he had waited until the end of January and he was actually in his position and he had done what he did, he would have been doing his job. So
yes.
So the fact that that's what he pled to, that leads me to believe, when you take a plea deal, you plead to a lesser charge. So did he actually do something that's way worse than this, but he pled to the lesser charge to save face and keep himself out of more trouble?
I don't think so, but maybe. I mean, so many, you can really go down the rabbit hole with all this stuff, but giving false testimony to the FBI, to me, seems like the cheapest of cheap shots with something like this. When they knew, and here's the other thing, there's almost like a case for an entrapment here, because they had tapped the people that he was meeting with, and they knew about all this stuff. So they were asking him questions about, did you go to this meeting? Did you not go to that meeting? When they knew he went, just to see if he would lie. And I guess maybe they thought that will open up, you know, they'll get some leverage on him or something. It seems like a real cheap shot to me. It's like there's no real there. However, you raise an interesting point. Why would he plead guilt? I guess just to get it off. I don't know. It's a good question. He owes – all I know this. He owes Uncle Sam like $900 because that's the fine. And then what everybody – what all the people on the right are saying, and I'm trying to steer away from the whataboutisms. Mm-hmm. But like when they had Hillary Clinton and all those people testify about the emails and the servers and all that stuff, why didn't they swear her in?
Oh, I agree
with
you.
Why wasn't that sworn testimony? Because you know, there was some, I can't remembers, and I forgot, and I don't know, I guarantee. But they didn't want to find – I don't think they wanted to find her guilty. And that's the dude who's the guy who was in charge of the Hillary Clinton stuff, like, we're not going to swear you in. Just tell us to the best of your recollection. That was one of the dudes from the Mueller probe.
You know – First off, let me say, I agree with you 100%. And I'm no fan of Hillary Clinton. And, you know, I saw her as the lesser of two evils. And I can't even say that things would have necessarily been better had she won, because she has her own set of problems. But remember this, Hillary Clinton will never get to be president. She is a pariah on the Democratic Party for the rest of her days.
Yeah, it's weird, and I'll just be honest. I actually, in a weird way, I feel bad for her.
Wow.
It's a very tragic story. It's very, to me, it's Shakespearean in a weird way. She hitches her wagon to Bill Clinton. And you know, it's a political marriage. Once upon a time, they were probably in love, and she thought it was going to work out. However, okay, he's the governor of Arkansas, and he kind of can't keep his wiener in his pants, but he's on the fast track to here, so I'm going to stick with him. And she like had a little plan, and it just never worked out. There's that, like, okay, because it all worked out. Okay, I'm the first lady. And then when he's out of office, what I'll do is I'll run for senator from New York, set myself up that way, go from there, and then the next stop is the presidency. And it just didn't work out. She got totally blindsided by the one and only Barack Obama, Mr. Charisma himself. So then she's like, okay, I can beat Donald Trump. This guy I can mop the floor with. And it has to drive her crazy. I can't imagine. It's got to be just maddening to get up every morning and just be like, I lost to that guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
To that guy. Especially now when, you know, Al Franken just had to resign, which in my opinion he shouldn't have, but he did, for like groping or whatever. And then you've got, you know, the Hollywood Access Hollywood tapes of Trump just – you know, you can grab him by the bring, bring. Like if that, I don't know. It's very tragic. Hillary Clinton's life is a tragic life. So, I mean, I'm not going to lose sleep feeling bad about her.
You know, but you just brought up Al Franken, and you know, you and he, you actually share a little bit of DNA in the fact that you both come from the comedy world, the television writing world. I wanted to ask you something that occurred to me about everyone okay. who's coming out and accusing him, because a lot of it is, oh, he grabbed my butt. Oh, he touched me in this way. Now, I have to imagine that when you were touring around the world and you were doing stand-up comedy, you probably took a lot of pictures with people.
Yes.
So, you know, you put your arm around them on more than one occasion, or, you know, they're like, oh, Michael Loftus, he's cute. So they kind of snuggle up into you. I'm assuming that's happened to you before.
Yes, it has.
And now, obviously, you and I have talked. There's no Me Too situation in the Michael Loftus canon. But do you think you ever accidentally, like, brush someone's butt or put your arm around someone and, like, oh, my hand was not supposed to go there? Did that ever happen to you?
I have to think it did, and we joked about it in the moment, and it was both parties laughing about it. There was no, this girl's asleep, and I'm going to pretend like I'm grabbing her boobs for the sake of a joke thing. So, yeah, I'm sure I've probably like grabbed a handful of butt, but I'm sure I've brushed the occasional, as your hand makes that sweep. I always go up around the shoulders. That's my thing. I do like the rock star. I throw my hands up over the shoulders when I'm taking the pictures. But yeah, I kind of think I know where you're going with this and what you're getting at, but that what we're saying Franken did? Because, like, I saw the Dustin Hoffman picture, and I guess Dustin Hoffman had, like, a practical joke he would do. Like, are you ready? Take the picture on three. One, and then on two, he would grab their boob, and then on three, he would take his hand down. To me, that's hilarious. I think it's hilarious. If the other person is laughing, too. I mean, it doesn't work if you tell them, hey, on two, I'm going to grab your boob. This country has a lot of growing up to do.
Yeah.
However, you're not allowed to do that kind of thing. But with Franken, like, now they say there's another accuser. Then that's what they said. Like, if one more comes forward, he's got to go. And I don't even know. Beyond the girl, he grabbed her boobs while she was sleeping or pretended to or whatever. I don't even know what he's accused of. I don't know the details.
Well, I mean, she was sort of patient zero in all of this. And then a couple of people have said, Al Franken inappropriately touched me over my clothes while I was doing this with him. That's a lot of what's been going on with him.
Yeah, I tell you what, I think Al Franken should have dug in his heels. I guess maybe he still can. He said in the upcoming weeks, I'm going to resign. But I listen, you've got the right to face your accusers, and you got the you can't just. We're in dangerous territory here, ladies and gentlemen, when we just start saying this guy did that, he should be fired, and then the guy who's accused doesn't get to fight back at all. Now, I understand, and this is actually a big problem I have with the Democratic Party and the way they tend to do things. I understand the emotional component of when someone has been abused or they've been raped or and they just need to say that guy did that. You've got to believe me. All right, I'm on board. I'm going to believe you. I'm going to believe that happened. Okay, then I'm going to want to talk to that dude and go, did this really happen? Because this person says it did. Where were you on the night of the 25th between the hours of 10 and 10:45? You know, that kind of thing. And then if the guy, it's just, I don't know. I never want to see an innocent person go to jail. I don't want to see innocent people have their lives ruined. I also want to believe the accusers, but we are a nation of laws. So I think Al Franken made a huge mistake. And I don't think other people should be expected to follow suit.
Well, I mean, I don't think this has anything to do with the law, quote unquote. I mean, obviously, if Al Franken is guilty, then he should resign and he should go to jail and he should bear the consequences. But isn't this just the Democrats pushing him out, trying to take the moral high ground in all of this? Because I think that might be what they're gearing up for come 2018. They're going to say, we are the moral party.
Yeah, yeah. And good for them, and they can have a good go at that. Like, but I, you've got how many congressmen are there? How many senators?
435 congressmen's jobs are up for grabs, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think it's about 29 senators whose jobs are up for grabs.
There's always going to be a dude who can't keep it in his pants. There's always going to be that guy. If you've got more than like three dudes in a room, one of those dudes is going to be the guy who goes too far too fast, the guy who doesn't get it. I mean, this is a sea change. Men's behavior has to change. It has to change. It's not the 1950s anymore. It's not the 70s. Whatever. So there's going to be a lot of innocent people and there's going to be a lot of carnage as we make this change. However, when you have these types of personalities, these people that want to be, this is why Hollywood is doing it too. You want to be famous. You want to be a rock star. You want to be a politician. You want that position of power and authority. People find that attractive. You know, you see some of these dudes in Hollywood, they just look like total, just like the ugliest, hairiest, fattest, sweatiest, nastiest human being on the planet. And then he gets into a Lamborghini and people are like, ooh, that's a movie producer. And all of a sudden, hot chicks, their heads are turning. And we both know that's the case.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. I've seen it before.
And the same thing is going to happen in Congress. They'll continuously go. So I would be very – I mean, people are – I think the Democrats are trying to take the moral high ground. However, it's going to suck when they're like, we're the Democrats and we have the moral high ground. And then as soon as some Democratic senator or congressional aide does something, somebody, you don't have the moral high ground. And if I was the conservatives, obviously they got problems of their own. They shouldn't even talk about the moral high ground right now. However, and I've stayed away from the Judge Roy Moore thing, for a reason. And because I'm taking the chicken way out of this. I'm gonna let the people of Alabama decide. The timing of it is always what's hinky with me. So I would implore you, if you've been molested by a judge, go ahead and say it now. Don't wait until it looks hinky. What are you waiting for? If somebody did something like that to me, I would say immediately. I would go immediately. I don't think I'd wait. Oh, in 1977, he asked me on a date. What year is it now? Oh, it's 2017. But he's about to become a senator, so I thought I'd have to talk about it now. Did you really? Did you really have to wait? You weren't worried when he was running for judge? You weren't worried when he was It's hinky. I wouldn't falsify a yearbook. I wouldn't add stuff in there and say it was true. And the other thing I wouldn't do, when Gloria Allred called me up, I wouldn't say, sure, let's do a press conference together.
You know
that
what?
Chick is the kiss of death.
I have to say, I think that's the perfect place to take a break.
Okay. Ooh, it is. And so I'm gonna flip through at random, and I'll tell you right now, that's not a good one. That's not a good one. I'm going to do – this is page 114 from the book Bigley by Rob Long, a collections of poems from the works of Donald Trump. This is The World is an Angry Place. The title of this one is The World is an Angry Place. I'm going to read this as Jimmy Stewart, because he did It's a Wonderful Life, and this will be an early Christmas treat for everybody. The world is an angry place. The world's a mess. The world is as angry as it gets. What? You think this is going to cause a little more anger? The world is an angry place. That would have had a haiku vibe to it.
Ooh, snaps for you.
Snaps for the... Oh, here's another one because it's super short. This is really like a haiku. This one's called Critics. Critics. I don't call them critics. I call them fools. Dun, dun, dun. Super short. Okay, so this is a nice little segue into another little segment, the fake news thing, which is really getting bad, in my opinion. And it's to the point where this is not a joke. I'm legitimately concerned. What do they call the press? The Fourth Estate?
Yes.
I consider myself somewhat intelligent. I like to read from different news sources and get from more than one place. That's the only way you can kind of go, okay, they said this and they said this, and the truth is probably somewhere in the middle, what's really going on. However, there is a really disturbing trend with news. They're not doing old-fashioned journalism. The ABC News guy, that the breaking news about General Flynn and he's agreed to testify against Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And that just there was nothing there. The stock market went down like 300 points. It was just, and this guy's done this before in the past. He has a history of this, but he does not like the president. He's got skin in the game. So he pushed the story forward. Other news networks went with it, and it was just not true. It was just not true at all. CNN had one the other day where they're like, oh, there was an email that Donald Trump Jr. got about WikiLeaks. And see, it's dated September 4th. And ha ha ha, we got him, we got him. Well, no, it wasn't. It was actually dated September 14th. And it was public knowledge. And so there is no story there. However, they act like, oh, we got him, we got him. And they're just so eager to go. And then a photographer, Dave Weigel, I think his name was, from the Washington Post. Now, granted, he didn't put this on the Washington Post. This is his personal account. But he took a picture of Trump's rally in Pensacola before the people all filed in. So there was a few people there, a lot of empty seats. And then he's like, packed to the rafters, huh? Like, and he knew exactly what he was doing. And he goes, oh, but that was my personal Twitter account, not the Washington Post. I was just doing that as a joke. That's like you're trying to, and it's like, I think it was the New York Times or the Washington Post did on the day of the inauguration. They showed a picture that was like hours before the actual inauguration took place, and they go, ooh, look how empty it is for his inauguration. Well, that's not when he was being sworn in. So you're purposefully misleading people. I'm starting to get afraid that emotions are the headlines. Emotions are the story rather than just tell me what's going on. Just tell me what's going on. Take you as a journalist, you have to take yourself out of the equation. Those are my thoughts on fake news. Dun, dun, dun.
All right. So a couple of questions there. All right. Because I have always hoped that we can use this podcast to save the world. So
yes, that is the intention.
Question number one. All right. How does a news organization compete when at the end of the day, their competition is anyone and everyone with a Twitter account?
How do they compete?
Yes. So, I mean, for all intents and purposes, anyone who has a Twitter account can claim that they are a journalist. You know, there was a time where blogs were considered this weird fringe thing, but now blogs are considered to be very important news sources. Breitbart is a blog. The Huffington Post is a blog. Obviously, both sides will negotiate or argue whether or not those are important news sources, but they do provide news and they do have staffs involved. So when you have these large news organizations that are essentially being usurped by these quote-unquote blogs, that what they really want to do is they want to get the clicks. They're not as concerned about getting it right. How do you financially compete when someone's getting the story before you?
That's a great question. And I think part of the solution, just to put on my little thinking cap, is to – you have to differentiate – I think I said that correctly. I'm having a hard time. What is opinion and what is news? And we've talked about it on this very podcast too. Like Sean Hannity is not news. That's opinion. Who's the girl on MSNBC?
Rachel Maddow.
Rachel Maddow is not news. That's opinion. Now she's talking about news. This event happened, and here's what I think about that. But it's super dangerous when people believe, and it looks like the news, and it sounds like the news, and it smells like the news, however it's opinion. And that's like the Drudge Report is more news, you know, because at least that's just a link to headlines. This thing happened. They wrote a story. Here's the link to the story. But like there's a lot of what do you call it? Just finger pointers now that people think is news. Like somebody just sees something and they go, look, that's da-da-da-da-da. And you're, oh, that guy's pointing his finger. He must know what he's talking about. No, he's pointing his finger at an event. Actual journalism, you talk to somebody like Cheryl Atkinson, it really is who, what, when, where, why, and how, and all those wonderful things. And you got to take yourself out of the equation. I get very concerned because, you know, the big networks and the big papers, Washington Post, ABC, CNN, a lot of people look at them. And I have a more nefarious reason for why they're doing it.
Go on.
Well, this is from Cheryl Atkinson's first book that I read about this. You need information baked in. Like they know this from advertising. You have to repeat it a lot, and then you get an emotional response from the people you're targeting with your advertising. Like, oh, cookies, that makes me feel good. Oh, pumpkin pie reminds me of Thanksgiving. So I think that there is, and I don't think that there's like a board meeting and they talk about this. I think it's like an afterthought. However, what's being baked into the equation now? Because the more stories that these, in my opinion, anti-Trump news organizations are running, it's always, ooh, Donald Trump in trouble again for Russian collusion. Donald Trump in trouble again. They always say this kind of thing. He's not in any trouble. And well, I'll even give you a yet on the end of that. Let's say, because the probe isn't over, they're still looking. However, he's not in any trouble. He's in zero trouble. But they keep going, oh, another problem for the Trump campaign with Russia, Trump and Russia trouble, trouble with Trump and Russia, Russia and Trump. They now have, it's the, your regular person in America is being beat over the head with this. And so your casual person who doesn't really follow the story and read the news, they just hear Trump's in trouble for Russia, Trump's in trouble for Russia. And they've got, I think they've got over half the country convinced, indeed, Donald Trump committed a crime and is in trouble for something with Russia. So it's almost like a giant layup for the next presidential election, that it'll just be baked in to your average voter. Well, something's there, because I always, yeah, Trump's in trouble with Russia. It's just it's Pavlovian. And that's terrifying. That's terrifying.
Not to punch this too hard, but once upon a time, there was a law called the Fairness Doctrine that said that the news organizations weren't allowed to have opinion. They had to present all of the news in an objective way. Is that something we maybe need to revisit?
I think so. I think we kind of should for certain news organizations. Absolutely. But if you're an opinion show, you have to be labeled as an opinion. And if you are going to call yourself the news, it just has to be the news. I don't want to get my news filtered through somebody's opinion machine. At some point, and this is going to be like my moral high horse, blah blah blah. The future of we do need a free press. We have to have that. That's the whole who's watching the watchers. Like we have to have that. That is key. However, if those institutions have been compromised and now have skin in the game and are rooting for one side to win, you should be terrified. You should be really – it's George – it's Orwellian. It really is.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, I was going to say, like, I don't even know how to how to pivot from that, because that's it is dark. It is deep, and it's
– Yeah, it certainly isn't funny. However, the longer I've done this, like I started with the TV show like 3 years ago, and then you being a semi-intelligent person, you start looking at this and you look at that, and you're like, wow, they had to know that was a mistake. They had to know that was a mistake, but they did it anyway. Why would they do that? Why? Unless there was a reason for it. And I really wish I could remember the name of Cheryl Atkinson's first book. However, like the Obama administration, Ben Rhodes and his brother who ran CBS News, they literally and Ben Rhodes, who worked for Obama, famously in that interview with the New York Times is talking about how easy it is to lead these reporters around by the nose. And he's like, oh, the average reporter is like 23 years old and blah, blah, blah. They don't know what the story is. They come to me and I tell them, terrifying, terrifying.
We should also say that Cheryl Atkinson's first book was called Writing Right for Broadcast and Internet News.
Oh, Writing Right. And then what was that? What was her next book?
The next book was Stonewalled.
Stonewalled. Yes. Which they're still doing to her. They're still like I follow her on Twitter and she's still trying to use the Freedom of Information Act and asking the FBI, can I see my file now? Can I see my file? No, not yet. Not yet. Sorry. Not yet. Not yet. You know, what are they waiting for?
You know,
what are they waiting for?
I will say this publicly, and this could actually be a lot of fun. I don't know if it's something that we'll be able to do before 2017 is up, but I mean, we could do a Loftus Party book club. I mean, her new book, The Smear, that could be a lot of fun to read together.
That could be a lot of fun, and I should write that down. That's a great idea. A book club. We could all read The Smear, and then we could have a schmear. and I would also like to read Brian Kilmeade's book, Miracle. In New Orleans, the Andrew Jackson book.
I like
it. That'll be a good one. Yeah, that dude's working hard. He was on this show, and man, oh man, there's a good chance he could get that book to number one on the New York Times bestseller. He could really do it.
Go buy the book. Take a picture of yourself holding the book. Tweet it at Kilmeade and tell him that the Loftus Party sent you.
That's a great idea. That's awesome. Okay, last bit of weirdness, little thing on the radar that I found very disturbing. The synagogue in Sweden where worshipers were like trapped in the synagogue, angry mob coming to get them. They've arrested three people. That is not good. That is really, really, really not good. And I find that disturbing. And I guess this is because Trump said that he's going to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel.
Yes. A little bit of background on this. Israel's been around since 1948. Jerusalem has been the capital since 1948. And ever since the day that Israel was founded, it's been contested whether or not it is a Jewish state. And so because of that, they have always put American embassies in Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv's kind of like the New York City of Israel. That's where all the happenings are. So
exactly. That's where the good strip clubs are.
I did not know that. They did not let me go to those on my birthright trip.
I had to go. How many times do you get to a strip club in Israel?
And is it one of those things where they just sort of yell at you in Hebrew and you really like it while they're doing it?
No, they're all Eastern European chicks. Oh. They might be Jewish, but it's like, yeah, it's like the strip clubs in Iceland. They bring them in from other countries. It's all these giant. Anyway, yes, Tel Aviv is a beautiful city.
Yes.
I had a blast.
Yes, Tel Aviv is wonderful, but because it's happening this way, and because Trump has a good relationship with Netanyahu, the Palestinians and the Arabs and the Lebanese, they're looking at this saying, well, we can't allow people to think that Israel actually is the Jewish homeland, so we got to start messing with stuff. And that was sort of the birth of what happened here in Lebanon. There have been rocks being thrown at Israeli Defense Forces. There's been a lot of stuff that's happened since Trump said he was going to move the American embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem.
Well, I think it's an awesome move. I'm for it 110%. Bill Clinton said he was going to recognize Jerusalem as the capital, and then he never did. George Bush said he was going to do it, and then he never did. Obama said he was going to do it, and he never did. So, boom. Well, Mr. Bigley himself is like, here we go. It's the capital. Can we please move on? And I would say this to all the pro-Arab, pro-Palestinian people. You might want to start taking these deals that your Jewish friends are handing out, because waiting is not helping. You might want to take the next one they offer.
That is the craziest thing, is that I believe it was 2003, Ehud Barak, who was the prime minister of Israel at the time, and I'm sorry if this is boring, but I'm really into Israeli politics. He basically said to the Palestinians, all right, We need peace. All right. It's time. We've been fighting for too long. All right. I am going to give you 97% of everything that you had before the Yom Kippur War. I'm going to give it to you. And you just have to agree that there is peace. And Yasser Arafat, who was the head of the PLO at the time, basically gave him the middle finger.
Yes. It consistently happens. It consistently happens. And I'm not like a giant scholar on Israel. However, just as the casual observer, it seems to me Israel has bent over backwards. Okay, we'll give you back this. We'll do that. Just do this. And then it's never good enough. It's never good enough. It's almost like they just don't like Israel, and they want them wiped off the face of the map. And it's all just a waiting game. So good for Donald Trump, good for Israel, good for the people of Jerusalem, but it's going to be dicey for a while. It's going to be dicey.
And actually, however, if it's all right with you, in the show notes on the Flipside TV show, we had a writer, Andrew Clavin, on the show. He has a great video talking about how Middle East peace can come about, and his response is, just give it all to the Jews. So if it's cool with you, I'll put that in the show notes so that our listeners can go and find that later.
That's fantastic. That's wonderful. I tell you, just driving around that area, you can see it with your own two eyes. I don't know what the Arab nations are doing with their money, but they're not helping out their people. You literally cross you cross like a no man's zone. You go from Arab territory to Israel, and you're like, wow, this is nice when you fix it up. This is they're not. I wouldn't be. I'm not a big Yasser Arafat guy. I'm always about the democracies and the. Anyway, that's where I stand on that one. You know, the holidays are upon us, and this is going to sound hokey, but it's for real. Why not get that special someone in your life some Loftus party gear? We have everything. It's silly. It's stupid. We've got Flying Tiger travel mugs. We got tote bags. We got mouse pads. We got T-shirts. A lot of these are under $20. Now, let me be honest. If there's someone in your life that you can't spend $20 on, what are you doing with your life? Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah. Go to LoftusParty.com, click on party gear. You got $20? Come on, that's Denise. You love her. Okay, quickly, we're going to get into some more fun stuff, some Hollywood. I wanted to tell one quick story about some things that excite me. We were talking earlier about Hollywood and movies that are coming out and blah, blah, blah. And it's a fun little story about there's this new movie coming out. What's it called? Ready Player One.
Yes.
Ready Player One, which is set in the future in Columbus, Ohio, my hometown.
Woo.
Yes. So here's a funny little thing. I was part of an improvisational comedy group. We did sketches, we did songs, we did improvisation. We were pretty popular. We had a lot of shows that we did every week in Columbus. We traveled around the country. We did shows in comedy clubs. But we had these other gigs in town back in Columbus that we didn't want to give up. So we started like a second group, they were called MC Squared. Because the group I was in was called Midwest Comedy Tool and Die. And then the other group was MC Squared. So we had auditions, and there was a guy, I guess, that auditioned to be part of our little improv sketch comedy group, and he didn't make it. He didn't make it. And we had to give him the bad news. Sorry, today's not your day. Well, that dude didn't give up. He kept at it, and he wasn't a performer. He was a writer, and so he pursued a career as a writer, and he just wrote a little movie called Ready Player One.
Now, is this Ernest Cline or Zach Penn?
I believe, and I'm probably going to – it's one of those two people. I believe it's Ernest Cline, Ernie.
Okay, because that dude has more geek cred than – pretty much any other writer in Hollywood, and Zach Penn is just below him.
Okay, well, I didn't even know this transpired, but there was another girl who was in the group who sent me a message on Facebook recently going, hey, that guy that wasn't good enough to be in your other little improv group is making this movie now. He wrote this movie, Neener, Neener, Neener. And I'm like, that's awesome. Good for him. Like, totally good for that dude.
Yeah.
It's great. Listen, life's going to kick you in the teeth. And then what do? Then you get up and you get going and you write a movie with Steven Spielberg.
You see, that's what we don't have enough of in this world today. Like, I want to see people fail or at least fall down so they get the experience of what it takes to stand back up just so they know they can do it.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. And I literally, before we started doing this, I put it on the Loftus Party Facebook page. There's a nice little video that somebody made about George Lucas and how when he was going out with Star Wars, the first, the movie, the very first one, nobody wanted to make it. Nobody wanted to make it. Rejection, rejection, rejection. Finally, a company said, yes, but we're not going to give you this. And so that's what happens. You fail, and then you get back up and you keep going. And that's why I want to make capitalism and entrepreneurship extremely easy. I want to make it as easy as we possibly can because I really think that's the best way out of this.
All right. I'm behind you then.
Yeah, yeah. I was talking to Michael Steele about it a million years ago, and it's like, okay, you've got these economically depressed areas, you know, Detroit, Chicago, St. Louis, every big city has them. How do we find the next kid that wants to open up a business, but he doesn't know how to do it, and he doesn't have a buddy that's a lawyer, and he doesn't have two nickels to rub together, but he has a great idea? We have to encourage those guys and girls. Okay, you want to open up this? Okay, well, I'm going to try to find you the money, and let's do that, and let's do this, and let's get you going. They might fail. They probably will fail. However, they'll learn something, and the next one will go great. And then all of a sudden, you'll be like, wow, this is a great neighborhood now.
Actually, you will love this because one of the things that's happening right now, as you know, I grew up just outside of Detroit. I grew up in the suburbs, and I grew up there at a time where you just kind of knew that you didn't go past 8 Mile because it was a very depressed area. It wasn't necessarily safe. But now things are starting to turn around there. And one of the major reasons that they're starting to turn around is because, I don't know if you know this, our banking laws are set up in such a way where banks really can't give very risky loans to the little guy who's, you know, trying to do his startup so that he can make something happen. That's why VC culture has popped up as big as it has, because those guys can really go to the town on new and interesting ideas. But what they've started to do, Chase Bank is actually partnering with different local community organizations who are allowed to loan but are allowed to take on more risky candidates, working with these organizations so that these people can get their small businesses off the ground. And it's legitimately making sure that people do well while also doing good. That's the kind of stuff that I like to hear happening.
Me too. And I'll take that one step farther, dude. I think the future is in the past to a certain degree. Like with these policemen who sometimes, you know, assassinate people. And you have – back in the old days, in the 1930s, you had beat cops and everybody knew the cop. And I think we should get back to that. Like the police live in the community. They make the rounds. Now, granted, you always need oversight. Who's watching the watchers? That's the theme of this show. Cops in the community and those little mom and pop like savings and loans. You know, it's like, oh, I know that kid. Like it goes back to Jimmy Stewart and the savings and loan from It's a Wonderful Life. You know the person. That's a good kid. And that kid's got a great work ethic. On paper, I probably shouldn't give him a loan for $5,000. However, I know him. He's good for it. He's not going to let me down. Here's the loan for $5,000. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
So in that respect. And then also I think glass bottles will be coming back. That's the other thing. Like the future's going to look like the past. I don't know why everything isn't in a glass bottle. Yeah, I know they break, but they're completely recyclable. Completely. You put the glass in a furnace, beep, boop, boop, you get back more glass. Like why – like enough with the plastic. I don't like the big floating island of plastic garbage in the ocean. I don't know who likes that. So let's go back to glass bottles. And you know what else I would love? I'm not even kidding you. Every Friday I go by 7-Eleven and I get a little thing of milk for my cereal on the weekend. And then I work so hard during the week, I don't have time for my little thing of cereal. So I wish the milkman was back. It would be a nice convenience for me if I could just wake up on Saturday morning and there'd be a bottle of milk on my front stoop. That'd be great.
You know, you can actually set that up online, right?
You know what? Here's the thing. I probably wouldn't do it. I'd be too terrified that the guy spit in it or something. I guess as long as like the seal isn't broken.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, you guys, you know what we should do? Let's go around. Let's go down the list of stories we didn't have time for.
There was a lot.
Yes. Here's the things that we didn't. Next week's show is going to be a riot because here's what we're getting into. Virtual reality porn. I really want to talk about this. There's this incredible her name is Zoe something. I'm going to reach out to her on Twitter and see if we can get her on the show. She's got her degree in blah 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 science. She's a porn actress. She does some S&M type stuff, and she is on the very cutting edge with this VR virtual reality porn. She's firing up her own business. I was doing some research into it today. Unfortunately, didn't have the goggles, or I would have done more. I want to talk to about some. I want to talk about The Darkest Hour, that movie with Gary Oldman, getting crazy good reviews. I want to see that. I want to talk to about some of the best games of this last year. Maybe this is for the year in review one. But there, I saw the trailer for this new game. You guys, check out Death Stranding. Death Stranding. It's an amazing trailer. It's amazing. It's Guillermo del Toro is in it. A couple of other real Hollywood heavy hitters. It's art, it's cinema, and it's gaming all wrapped into one. This is one of those things where everything in my bones is telling me this is a super important game. I love it. I love it when art and gaming and cinema come together. It's wonderful. Okay, so that is – okay, I'm going to do a Michaeltopia, and then we're going to stick the dismount. You ready for this?
Ready for this.
Okay, in the real world, there's a bunch of goofy rules and laws that we all have to live by, and they're stupid, and we're frustrated, and we hate it. But in Michaeltopia, there's a different set of rules, just like in Asgardia. In Michaeltopia, we all live by these, and we're all happy. In Michaeltopia – the host of the podcast always makes sure he has enough time to talk about the stuff he wants to talk about. That's unacceptable that he doesn't get to the fun stuff he was really looking forward to. So that's one rule. In Michaeltopia, which can now be a thing, there can be a real Michaeltopia. This company called Asgardia, they either they have launched or they're going to launch a little piece of material about the size of a toaster. They're going to put that into outer space, and they're going to declare that their own kingdom. And then they're going to build out from there their own space station. I want to do this. We don't have to call it Michaeltopia, because really, I think it's a crappy name for a new civilization. However, I kind of want to do a Kickstarter. I don't know how much money we need, but I'd love to launch something into space. And this isn't some crap like we're going to name a star after you. You guys, we're going to do this. We're going to launch something into space. We're going to declare our own little empire, and then we're just going to start building out. We're going to start building out from there. We'll buy some old used stuff from Russia. We'll have to figure it out. It'll be like Minecraft, but incredibly difficult. That's the show. You guys are awesome, and I want to thank you again. I did it at the top of the show. I want to do it again right now. Thank you so much for sharing the stuff, and thank you for being our friend on Facebook and being there with us on Twitter, all of the above, and Instagram. I'm doing more on Instagram. I'll catch up. There's so much to do, and for subscribing to the Loftus Party YouTube page. The subscriptions are way up. It's all wonderful and good, and we're having fun and we're doing it, man. We're doing it. You guys are the best. I think that's it. Go do some holiday shopping. I'll see you next week. Peace.